You're welcome. And I love looking out and seeing new, fresh faces. It's been a blessed month that we've had so far. 3 weeks ago, we had a gentleman come over, Mike Soto, and he preached for us. And then last week, we had another guest speaker, Rich Howell. And both these men are trying out at this congregation for the current vacant minister spot. And I don't know if either of them will be chosen, but it was really good to hear a fresh views and talking and everything like that, and I thought they both did a great job. 2 weeks ago, for the people that were here, you'll remember that Ken Looper got up here, and he had an amazing, amazing lesson about honoring, just what it means to honor people, and he gave some examples from China and all that. And it was, I just was so impressed by what he had to say. But we often speak, usually when I think about speaking, I think about honoring God. When we're talking about honoring people. And we also think about honoring each other. That's what Ken was really focusing on. And it reminded me, and I wanted to tell you this last week, but of course I didn't speak last week, so it didn't matter. I guess I should preface by saying, I think we need to start teaching honor early. We need to quit waiting until I'm already 50-something before I start being taught honor. And there was a class, I remember back a number of years ago, where a teacher, she decided to teach the Ten Commandments to her kids. And she was talking about honoring your father and your mother, of the Ten Commandments. And she looked around, she said, but she asked her children, does it say anything about honoring your brothers and your sisters? And one hand went up and he said, yeah, thou shalt not kill. Anyways, honor. It's an important thing for us. But I've got a little bit of a story to tell you today. I don't know if you remember the history that came along around the kingdom of Israel. So the kingdom, the Israelites all come to the kingdom, to the land of Jericho and Canaan. And while they're there, they split up into 12 different groups done by tribes. So there was 12 tribes that made up the kingdom of Israel. And then after the third king died, Solomon, there was a difference in opinion as to how the person should rule between Jeroboam and Rehoboam. And the northern kingdom, which is already kind of separating themselves a little bit, decided that they were going to split off, and they went off on their own, and they became the kingdom of Israel. And the last and the bottom part of the, if you're thinking of the region, and the bottom part was the area of Judah, because the tribe of Judah said, no, we're going to remain true to the line of David, and we're going to stay true to God's purpose. And so they stayed there in that land. And Benjamin then joined them, and somewhat later, parts of the tribes of Simeon and Manasseh and Ephraim also joined them. And they became the kingdom of Judah. So we have a smaller part in the bottom that's the kingdom of Judah, and we have a large group up that's mostly made up of 10 tribes up in the north. And that's northern kingdom, or the kingdom of Israel. Now, what happened was that in the southern part, they had the city of Jerusalem. The city of David, that was where the Ark of the Covenant was kept. That's where that was the capital before. What do you do if you're the northern kingdom? The northern kingdom's not like they can come down and say, okay, we're going to be separate, but we're still going to share a capital with you. So they moved their capital to a city called Shechem. And over time, after King Omri created a new capital, and that capital was the city of Samaria. Now, you may have heard of the city of Samaria, because later on, that whole region became known as Samaria, and we talk about lots of times about the Samaritan, the woman at the well, and different things about the Samaritans that later on came about, and it can be read about in the book of Nehemiah, especially whenever they come back to build a temple. So, you've got this all figured out now, right? We've got the southern part, that's Judah, and then north, we have the northern kingdom, or Israel. Now, if you go right above the northern kingdom, to the north of it, is what we would call modern-day Syria. But at that time, it was called Aram. The Arameans wanted the land directly to the south of them. They wanted to take over control of the northern kingdom. And so they were constantly at this kind of a stalemate because they wanted to attack, but the northern kingdom was too strong and too big. And so they didn't ever, they tended to avoid it. And if you remember in 2 Kings chapter 5, if you don't have a Bible, let us know. I'll get you a Bible. 2 Kings chapter 5, it talks about a man named Naaman. Naaman was the chief of the royal army, the head of the army of Aram. And he came down to see Elisha. And on the way, he stopped at the king's, and the king said, and he said, okay, I need to be healed. My king up in Aram has sent me down here for you to heal me of my leprosy. And the king said, oh my goodness. That king up there is trying to make me look bad to give me him a reason to come attack us. And so he went berserk, and finally somebody said, well, why don't you send him to Elisha? And Elisha healed him, and then he went back, and everything was good for a little while. But over time, the king of Aram decided to actually wage war against the northern kingdom. He was going to try to take it over. And this is where we're going to pick up the story today, and it's in 2 Kings chapter 6. Now, what happened is pretty simple, that the king of Aram is going to come down and try to engage the Israelites. And this is what we read. Now the king of Aram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, I will set up my camp in such and such a place. The man of God, that's Elisha, sent word to the king of Israel, beware of passing that place because the Arameans are going down there. So the king of Israel checked out on the place and indicated by the man of God. And time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places. Now, can you imagine what's happening here is that they're coming down and they're setting up camp down in the Egyptian, in the northern kingdom's area, waiting for the king's army to come through, and then they're going to attack. They're going to get them. But Elisha, he's telling the king, don't go over there, because that's where the Arameans are going to go. So they go around this way. And the king, the captain of the army went, what? How'd that happen? So he'd shift his army to be in front of the army of the Israelites, and Elisha would say, don't go there, because he's going to be over here. So they'd go down this way. And he'd go, what? How'd he do that? How's he keep knowing? And what is his first thought? What would be your first thought? I've got a spy in my camp. I've got somebody in my camp, and they're going out, and they're telling the king where we're going. And so he turned to his people, and he said, I'm going to kill you. Which one of you is doing it? And somebody finally raised his hand and said, it's not us. They've got this man down there. It's a man of God named Elisha, and Elisha keeps telling them where to go. He said, I want you to find out where this man Elisha is. My first point is this. The evil is waiting to get you. It's waiting to get you. But we need to avoid it if possible. Avoid being sucked into the problems that are caused by the things in this world. It's easy, so easy for me to get focusing on what's going on in New York. It's so easy for me to get focused on how bad they're treating kids at our school or how they're teaching this at the school. It's easy for me to get sucked into how bad things are and the evil that's going on out this world that's trying to get me. And if I'm not careful, the very evil that I'm trying to, that I'm getting upset with is going to actually draw me into the evil. It's easy for me to get into that point. I've seen it before where people think that they're trying to help out, doing hateful things to people in the name of love because they see evil in whatever the other person's doing. Have you not seen that? Hey, you know, I see people, they say, okay, don't go see this movie. It's an evil movie. It's a bad movie. Don't go see it. We're going to boycott this whole movie. And then what happens? More people go see the movie, right? I get curious. I want to go see what's so bad about the movie. We all want to know. Quit trying to engage the evil. Focus on the good. Stay on the path that God gives you rather than being drawn into You know, I didn't do the slide. And being drawn into the... That's what I just read. And I didn't read it. Now, the king of Aram was at war. Did I read that? Oh, well. Let's go to the next thing. So, here's what... I'm not good at this. It took me like 3 hours to put these 10 slides together. But anyways, here's what the deal is. You know what this is a picture of? It's not many volcanoes. You know what this is? Ant hills? No, just a reverse. Ant trap? This is an ant lion lair. Have you ever heard of an ant lion? How many people have heard of ant lions? Okay, a few of you have heard of them. I taught my kids. I love ant lions. I think they're the coolest thing ever. You can find them anywhere where they have sandy ground. And they build these little conical little things on the ground like this. And the whole purpose of this is to catch ants. And so these little creatures are the ugliest little things. They look like that. Oh, it's ugly. Okay, I'll turn that off so it don't scare you. They're little teeny things, about this big, and they don't hurt you. And they scoop backwards whenever they're so funny to look at. And they have these little pincher things. And what they do is they find a sandy area, and they use these pinchers, and they have their head can kind of like go flip, 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 like that, and it'll flip this sand right out of that hole. And they'll flip the sand out of the hole, and they'll keep doing that until it gets down into a little cone, and then they'll get down underneath it in the bottom, and they'll just wait. They're just waiting for an ant to walk by. Now the ant thinking, I'm just out for a stroll, and he goes over and he steps into this cone thing, and it's got this sand on it, and goes, kind of slides down to the bottom. He said, oh, that's not a big deal. So he starts trying to climb back out. And as he climbs, he knocks sand down below. And the ant lion comes alive. And he starts flicking sand up on that ant. And the ant, the more he tries to get up, the more he keeps getting knocked down until he gets down far enough for those pinchers to grab him. That's us. Satan is just waiting for us to step into his little circle and to drag us down. What's the best way of doing it? To find a good way to climb out of the hole? Is that how we want to do it? You think it's good for the ant? The ant to say, okay, here, what we're going to do is we're going to develop an ant that has a way of reaching up and pulling himself out of the hole? No. The best way to avoid is to avoid. Don't fall in the trap. Go around the trap. There's a great poem. I wish I'd brought it. It talks about and if you've heard the poem, it's great. And it talks about, I walked down the street. There was a hole in the street. I fell into the hole. Have you ever heard that? Look it up. Because I don't know it all. Next day, I walked down the same street. I saw the street. I noticed the hole. I still fell into the hole. It keeps going on like that, you know, until finally one time he finally realizes, don't go down that street. Right? We avoid evil if we can. Evil's waiting for us. It's not like it's going away. Okay? It's not going to, because I'm nice, it's not going to avoid me. It's up to us to avoid evil. You say, well, Eddie, how do you know this? Well, it says, let's see. Here it is. He, Satan, was a killer from the very start. He couldn't stand the truth because there wasn't a shred of truth in him. And when the liar speaks, he makes it out of his lying nature and fills the world with his lies. I took this from the Message Bible, from the Message version. But I love the way it puts it. He's a liar and he's trying to get you to fall into his hole. Don't listen to him. It says, be alert and sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Keep a cool head, though. Stay alert. The devil's poised to pounce and would like nothing better than to catch you napping. That's the Satan. That's the trap. That's the hole in the ground. That's what he wants you to do. He wants you to fall into the hole. He's waiting for you. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this, how? With gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. For it's better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil. Another one. But to those to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. Later it says, love your enemies, do good to them, and lend them without expecting to get anything back. And then your reward will be great, and you'll be the children of the Most High, because He is kind and to the grateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Let your gentleness be evident to all, Philippians chapter 4, verse 5. We are to be a people that don't look for evil. We're the people that stay avoid the evil because we are people of God. We are people that want to do something. Somebody out there is going, you know, I'm struggling today. I'm working. There's some problem I'm having today. May I encourage you? Step one, walk around the evil. You know, a long time ago, Cindy and I, we decided not to watch R-rated movies. A lot of people think we're crazy. Okay? And there are probably some out there that we're missing. We decided not to. And a lot of PG-13 movies we don't watch. And the reason why is not because I'm better than you. It's not because it's going to make me perfect. It's not because it's demanded in the Bible. Some people don't even watch TV, I think. Isn't that right, Titus? But anyways, what do? We don't watch it because we have discovered in our lives that it's something we want to avoid. We want to avoid the bad language. We want to avoid the evil things like that. That's something that we do. What do you do to avoid evil? So the king of Aram, he gets frustrated. He's convinced that he has a spy. Already went over this. And one of his officers told him what happened. And then we read this. Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force to Samaria, because that's where he'd heard that the man of God was. And when the servant of the man of God got up and went out in the morning, what does he discover? An army of horses and chariots surrounding the city. Oh no! Oh no, my Lord! What should we do? Is what the servant asked. Can you imagine? So you're the man of God and you're... Everything's good. You're telling the king what to do. And next day you get up and you look out and the city is surrounded by Aram. The very people they've been avoiding has now come to them. So what do they do? Don't be afraid, the prophet answered. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Can you imagine? He's like, oh, me and you? And Elisha prayed, open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see. And then the Lord opened the servant's eyes and he looked and he saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. There's a song that's sung, you know, about the angel armies. In Isaiah and some of the other books, it talks about the angel armies. God is on our side. God is on your side. Whenever it comes to that point where I can't avoid the evil has come to me. That's whenever I turn to God and I remember that God's got my back. It's hard for me to always live like that. But God is always there and God will always win. He's got angel armies watching over us right now. And you go, well, where is it? I don't see it. I don't have somebody to open my eyes. Oh, yes, we do. We have God's Word. We have the truth. We have the Holy Spirit. We have the Spirit of God in this very room that's watching over us. And we know this. It says, you dear children are from God and have overcome them because the one who is in you is greater than the one who's in the world. We have God on our side. I don't need to have my eyes open to know this. And yet I do. I sought the Lord and He answered me. He delivered me from my fears. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war with this world. The weapons we fight are not with weapons of this world. On the contrary, We have divine power to demolish strongholds. If you can't avoid the evil, if you just can't avoid the evil, sometimes it's despairing and it's like, God, what are we going to do? Remember that you have somebody greater on your side if you will trust in God. That's all it takes. God is the winner. Let's see. So, let's go on to the next part. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked, shall I kill... Okay, you're going back. I'm taking this off. Okay, here's what the deal. Sorry. I told you I'm not very good at this. So what happens is this, that... So Elisha bows down and he prays and he asks that the Arameans go blind. Now, I'm not sure if it's a blind, like that kind of a blind, or if it's a where am I kind of a blind. I don't know I don't know what kind of blind it was. All I know is that suddenly they couldn't see clearly what it was that they came to do. They couldn't fight the Israelites anymore. And so they come together and they say, they come down there and they just scoop them up. Elisha just takes them all and says, oh, here, come follow me. I'll take you where you need to go. And so he just marches them right, and they're happy to follow along. And they go right to the king of Israel. And they deposit him on his doorstep. The one that he's been avoiding these people, the one they've been trying to get, here they are, just deposited right there. And they said, the king looks at him and goes, well, thank you. And then suddenly the blinds were lifted. They could see again, and they realized where they were. And they realized what it meant. Death. They had walked into the enemy camp unbeknownst. They didn't know that they were there. And now it's time for dying. And they turned and they said, what are we going to do? We're going to die. And the king said, well, that sounds like a good idea. Is that what we should do? Should we go ahead and kill them? And this is Elisha's words. He says, when the king of Israel saw them, he asked, shall I kill them, my father? Shall I kill them? And he answered, would you kill those you have captured with your own sword and bow? No, set food and water before them so that they may eat and drink and then go back to their master. And then, so he prepared a great feast for them. And after they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away. And they returned to their master so that bands from Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory. Ignore that. All right. The last point is this. Treat your enemies to a feast. Treat your enemies to a feast. Show them a love and a kindness, a gentleness that they can't find in the world. Whenever they were brought before, he said, God has delivered these men to you. What are you going to do? Just kill them yourself and then take over now? Feed them. Show them what a good God is like. I have to admit, this is probably the hardest part for me. Avoiding evil. I don't watch R-rated movies. I don't go to bars. You know, I've got my things I don't have to do. All right? God is for us. Who can be against us? The battle belongs to the Lord in heavenly armor. You know? I know God's got our back. But the feast, do I treat my enemies with love? Do I treat my enemies with kindness? I had some scriptures for this too. I apologize for being a little bit discombobulated, but in Luke chapter 6 and also in Matthew chapter 5, it talks about how we're supposed to treat our neighbors. How do you treat your neighbor? or enemies, excuse me, not your neighbors, but your enemies. How do you treat your enemies? Well, the Bible says this. It says if somebody comes and tells you, if a centurion comes and he says, give, you know, walk a mile with this load, what are you supposed to do? Walk 2 miles. Somebody comes and says, give me your shirt or give me your cloak. It depends on how you, which version you're doing. What are you supposed to do? Well, you give him, take off your shirt and you give him your coat too. He says, oh yeah, take it all. I don't mind. What do we do? How do we treat people? People come and they say, I want to borrow money from you. And you say, okay, I'll loan you money, but you're going to pay me for this. And I'm going to want it back. And here's the days I want it. And this is how I'm going to do it. And he says, no, that's not how you treat people. How do you treat your enemies tells you more about how you are than almost anything else that you can have in your life. If you have somebody that's being evil to you, feed them. Feast them. Give them love. Give them an honor that they don't expect. Defeat their hate with love. Defeat their lying with honesty and truth. And you say, but Eddie, how do I do that? You know, I heard a long time ago, and this is something that I still live by today, and I think that it is something that's changed my life, that if somebody does something bad to you, somebody hurts you, somebody is evil to you, I don't care how bad it can get. I don't care if they killed your whole family or if they just, you know, decided to steal your car or they just borrowed some money and never gave it back. I don't care what they do. Pray for them. Pray for them. Ask God to bless them as much as God blesses you. Oh, yeah, no, but I don't want to do that. Now, that's going a little far, right? A little bit far. Try it. You think, Eddie, you know, that doesn't even make any sense. Try it. For 1 month, I'd say a week is probably plenty, but let's do it for a whole month. For a month, every time you get up in the morning, you say, God, bless my day. Oh, and bless my enemy's day, too. Try it. God, you know, I'm struggling right now with pain and my family and all these things that are going on right now. Oh, and for my enemy over here, this person that I hate, do the same for them. Spend a month praying for your enemy. Feast them. And watch the miracle. Watch the change. You know, the thing about this story is this. That it said in the very beginning, or in the one part, he said, where is the man of God? And he said, he's in a place called Dothan in Samaria. Have you ever heard of Dothan? It comes with another story. He's in Dothan, so we will go down there. There was another story. It was a story about 11 brothers, 10 brothers actually, that went out and they had their sheep and their flocks and they were taking them away and the father had sent them out to find grass. And as they were traveling, next to the youngest son, a man named Joseph, was sent after them. And he was told to go and find his brothers and check on them and bring them some food and love on them a little bit. And so he goes to this land where they're supposed to be and he can't find them. And he asked the man, where are my brothers? He said, I've seen them in the land of Dothan. And Joseph went to them. God, two stories, two men of God. One is going there for his death, and God revives him and saves him and saves all of Israel with him. And the other man, death comes to him, and God saves him. And God saves the whole land. God works in us. God works in us. Three things. One, the evil is real. It's trying to get you. It'll try to get you until the very day you die, and it's out there. Avoid it. Don't step in it. Okay? Why? Why do we force our... Just go around when you can go around. We don't need to engage evil. Second thing is that when it is unavoidable, when you can't get away from it, when it comes to you, remember, God is on your side. that God wants to save you. And the third thing is, feast your enemies. Feast those who come to you and try to hurt you, and God saves you. And watch the miracle happen. I apologize for the glitchiness that I went through with my slides and everything, but this is a story that means a lot to me. And I just encourage you to live in this way. Try it, like I said, for 90 days. Try it for 30 days and watch the miracle while we all stand and sing.
We would bless you with everyone.